Today, it's all about Gen Z and how Gen Z will impact world news. With Gen Z political and social commentator and social media influencer Lily Cole of The Lily Kate Show and Live Freely Ministries. Don't know much about Gen Z? Don't worry, you will now. Join us for this week's youth-powered edition of World News Brief. And welcome to this very special Gen Z edition of World News Brief. I'm your host, Winston R. Holland, and I'm joined this week by a very special guest. Her name is Lily Cole. She is a Gen Zer, I think by far the youngest person we've had on this podcast. I think not since perhaps Thani Abu Hamid, like a couple years ago, but he was like 24 at the time. But she is only 18 years old, but is already a powerful voice for the gospel and the conservative movement as a whole. Lily Cole, welcome to World News Brief.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan, so much for having me on.
Mr. Ryan, you see that? That shows her age as it is. But, you know, because with youth theater and stuff, we're surrounded by kids all the time. Our family does youth theater. And I was talking to a girl who's been in youth theater forever, but she's over 18 at this event. And I said, just call me Ryan. She's like, I don't know if I can do that. It's like, you're going to have to. You're an adult now, technically.
No, it's so true. I mean, I'm going to all these different radio shows and podcasts, and these people are older, and I always say Mr., and they're like, oh, please call me. And I'm like, I really just can't do that.
I don't have a paradigm for this. Yeah, no, that's cool. Well, thank you for being on the show. So we're going to dive into everything Gen Z, and trust me, folks, you're going to learn a lot about Gen Z that you didn't know. But you need to know. Why? Because they're the ones that'll be taking over for us in the not-too-distant future. They're kind of starting to already, and Lily's a great example of that, and they'll be the ones affecting the bulk of world news.
Yeah.
So Gen Z is very relevant. You want to know a whole lot about them. So we're going to dive into what Gen Z is, what makes them tick, their likes, their dislikes, what they're thinking, and all of that. But first, Lily, if you would, tell us a bit about your show, how you went from infant to this this social media influencer and a big voice for the conservative movement, especially amongst Gen Zers. Walk us through that process. Obviously, you know, you don't have to spend too much time on your first year after birth or whatever, but you know what I mean.
Well, the whole childhood, I grew up Christian, pro-life, pro-gun, classically educated, homeschooled. I was a gymnast, then I was a dancer. It taught me really good work ethic. Then when my little sister, when she was 9 years old, I'm about 4 years older than her, she actually started doing YouTube videos. And I was like, oh, that is pretty cool. I want to do YouTube videos as well. So I quit dance, started doing YouTube, started growing a following on YouTube and Instagram. And my sister and I together, we actually spent a lot of time in LA, a lot of time in Hollywood, getting connected with really powerful families there, going to YouTube events and just meeting a lot of people. And eventually, that wasn't what I wanted to do anymore. And
now, were you trying to do like getting into acting and movies and film and that kind of thing? Or was it just more so on the...
It was just on the social media influencing side. I never really even considered acting to be one of the prongs of my successful career. But yeah, it was more so just making YouTube videos, making TikToks, going to meet and greets, and just kind of being a social media influencer. Whatever your opinion about that is, it's probably true because it's a very loose job. But I didn't want to do that anymore. And, you know, with social media, cancel culture is a very real thing, and it's only been exacerbated in the past year. So coming home from LA, not being able to go over through COVID, the Lord was like, you're going to start listening to a lot of Daily Wire content, because I grew up, you know, pro-life, pro-gun, very, very conservative. And then going into LA and having to keep my mouth shut was really difficult. So I always felt more free when I came back here. All that to say, soon enough, I made the transition from my wholesome, unproblematic social media content to very problematic social media content.
Yeah, walk us through that. So you're at this point, you're a pretty big voice in the conservative movement, especially amongst Gen Zers. And, you're having to face something that you haven't faced before. So walk us through what how did the big tech oligarchs how did they attempt to cancel Lily Cole?
Oh yeah. Well, I guess we'll start at the beginning of 2020. I actually cut off a relationship with someone who I didn't want to be involved with anymore. Started dating someone else who I'm still with today, who's very right wing, like very much. Probably
love those very right wing guys,
yeah.
Right?
They're the Aryan, best. Blonde hair, blue eye, loves America type. He's my goodness, he's fantastic.
How could you date someone like that? They're automatically racist. Isn't that
oh,
true?
Oh yeah, no. He's a white supremacist. He's radical.
Everything. Yeah, yeah.
Everything. He's been called worse stuff than I have. So we started exploring all of this together, and I was just really like, wow, how can I get more involved? Because this is a fight that's happening. This is important. This is something that, you know, is really just undeniable what's happening now. Watching the election season of 2020 and all of the mess that came with that, Amy Coney Barrett getting confirmed. And the first real time that I put my foot out there was actually on the night that she was confirmed. I posted something on my story and I said, thank God a pro-life Supreme Court justice is being confirmed. I said pro-life or nothing. And that's when the hate started.
Oh, man.
I would get DMs. I would get comments. I actually ended up losing overall from November to now it's May. Crazy. About 80,000 followers. And I pretty much, I would say 50% of the comments I get, 50% of the DMs I get, the engagement is very hateful, very mocking, very disgusting, very telling of the divide that the media is really trying to push.
But this is the kind, tolerant, liberal left that believe in openness and inclusivity
and all of it.
Diversity.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Go look at my Instagram comments at It's Lily Kate, LilyKate. And you'll see how tolerant they really are. And you'll see how logical they really are.
Yeah, I mean, they are obviously just these beacons of moral and
it's parroting.
And
parroting.
Reason. Right.
Oh, yeah. No, and when there's one idea, they just parrot it again and again. So with that, in December, I opened a ministry where I do Bible studies with fans from all around the U.S., Christian conservative girls, wonderful girls, every Tuesday night. And then I also started a podcast called The Lily Kate Show. You can find it on Apple Music, Spotify, and I have been loving it ever since. I've been speaking a lot of times around Texas, getting lots of speaking engagements, and really just building my network around here and making that full transition from social media influencer to apparently very problematic influencer who doesn't, I don't have radical beliefs. I have commonsensical beliefs.
Yeah, that's exactly, everything is upside down.
Oh yeah.
Everything is upside down. Right is left, left is right. It's truly amazing to look at, and it really is a telltale sign really of a communist Marxist takeover when nothing makes sense anymore. And everything they say is like the opposite of what reality is, and we just see that more and more on a regular basis.
Well, there's two things. So I really think the loss of Christianity and the shutting down of churches has really heightened and made this race go a lot faster with the communism, Marxism, all of that entering our nation. But the second thing is the way you create chaos and madness is you make people have two conflicting ideas in their brain at the same time and have them believing those two conflicting ideas. That is how you can control someone because nothing's going to make sense to them anymore. They're going to be floundering around confused. And so there's a reason that they're trying to make us so confused, but also everything has to be so urgent all the time. Having grown up in a big family around a lot of big families, I call this big family syndrome, where everything at all times is heightened emotion. It's all very emotional. It's all very urgent, has to happen right now. And that's really what the media is trying to tap into, because when you have a lot of people and everybody's trying to compete, well, of course there's going to be a lot of noise. And of course it's going to be very, very loud.
Yeah, and there's always an emergency. Always the world is going to end now, yesterday. In 10 years, the globe is going to melt if we don't pass
ridiculous.
This insane Green New Deal, which really looks more like a seventh grade science project
kind
of wish list. It's always an emergency. And of course, with COVID and the lockdowns, if you can cause great fear and panic in the population, that is the way to control people.
Yeah,
is
exactly.
By fear. And then, like what you're saying, you're putting conflicting ideas in people's heads. where both are true, and people just can't handle that, and you put that on them all the time. It really is. It really is sad. I want to jump into Gen Z with you. So remind us. But I want people to know how to follow you online. So on Instagram, which a lot of us boomers and Gen Xers, you know, if we're going to talk about the generation divide here, we're not as quick to get on Instagram as perhaps your generation. I'm on there. We're on there at cgmradio.news. Mm-hmm. But I actually have a personal account on there, believe it or not, but I don't give that out over my show. But so you're on Instagram at
It's Lily Kate. Yeah. You can actually follow me on Facebook now. I finally have a Facebook page.
Oh,
where,
look at you.
I know. I'm moving outward. Yeah, but that's just The Lily Kate Show, L-I-L-Y-K-A-T-E. If anybody has a TikTok, you can follow my political account that has been banned for the fourth time currently.
Good for you. Good for you. You're doing something right.
Well, I had a good 2 weeks where I was able to post content, but then they banned me again. Anyway, that is called The Lily Kate. I'm trying to get as close as possible for all the usernames. Other than that, I don't post on YouTube anymore, so you'll want to get my podcast, The Lily Kate Show, Apple Music, Spotify, and wherever else you can get podcasts.
Okay, awesome. And I'll put links to all of that in the show notes of this podcast, so just click on more details or whatever, and you know, whatever podcast app you're using, all those links will be in there. You will want to follow her. I'm telling you guys, she's going to be like all over Newsmax and OAN and Fox News and all of that. Well, Fox News will even have her, but that's another thing. You know, before you know it.
People are calling me the white Candace Owens.
Yes. Yes. And I think we're going to find out why on as we go through and talk about Gen Z. And I totally see it. And that is a compliment of compliment.
But
you know that there are people that are offended by that already, but I'll tell you something.
Because everything's through the prism of race.
It is, but I tell you one person who would not be offended by that, and that is Candace Owens.
Very much, yeah. Well, maybe she'd look down upon me and be, you have some work to do.
I don't think so. I think maybe even at this point you could give her a run for her money.
But
she is spectacular. Let's be honest. She is absolutely spectacular.
But, definitely.
Okay, so your deal is you spend a lot of time. You are Gen Z. You're 18. Talking about Gen Z, I first actually saw you speak at the conference that your dad, Mark Cole, put on, Saving Civilization. I had Mark on a couple months ago. He's a guy I think he's only like a few years older than me, but I still want to be like him when I grow up.
Yeah, me too.
he's a great, great guy. But so tell us, what is Gen Z? Tell us about Gen Z.
Yeah, Gen Z is anyone born from 1997 to 2012. Some people say 2015, but I like to stick with 2012. Gen Z are clearly very, very emotional. We are very much products of absent parenting, in my opinion. Now, not my family, a lot of people I know, but overall, Gen Z, obviously, we've grown up with social media, with live streaming, movies on demand, everything on demand. We've grown up with fast food around us. We haven't really been through any hardships in our life. So, you know, the worst thing we've probably been through is the COVID pandemic, where people just locked us at home. And so all we have is social media left. We haven't been through war or famine or really that much poverty. I mean, it's very easy to get out of poverty now. And, you know, with that, we are very intuitive. We are very empathetic. We place a lot of value in our empathy, and that's something that we need to be highlighting as a strength. I mean, Gen Z, we are very emotional. We are acutely aware of our surroundings. We are acutely aware of our surroundings in social situations, so we can go into a room and instantly point out who is who, who's the popular one, who's the person who's going to take the lead, because we've seen so many movies about this, one, but two, we are just so intuitive in the way that we think, and that has its good sides and also its bad sides. But with that, I would say a very constructive thing that older folks can start doing is, you know, you look at Gen Z and you see a muddled mess. You see people with pink hair.
Well, there's all these stereotypes.
Oh,
right,
yeah. People who are crying all the time and emotional and, you know, blabbering all of this feminist nonsense. But really, in our soul core, all we want is to be important. All we want is to be included. All we want is to belong. And all we want is to be able to substantiate the difference that we're making. Because nothing makes Gen Z, like, our hearts warmer than coming out of a heart-to-heart knowing that we've helped someone. I always tell people this. I'm like, look, if you want to get your political views across to Gen Z, you're going to have to do it in a heart-to-heart way, not a debate way, because Gen Z automatically will shut down because we don't know how to deal with confrontation. We don't know how to deal with people being aggressive with us because we've never had to be that way. Right. So we're very much a product of 1960s, 1970s parenting because that was the first generation that had wealth after World War II, and their parents wanted to give them everything. And you know, that affluence created soft people, which has created soft parents, which has created a soft child generation. And you know, but overall, we really just want to belong, and we are aware of what's happening. We don't always say it, but we do have a lot of strengths in the way of empathy, and that's important to highlight.
No, that's and it makes me think of, there's this one show that I listen to on a fairly regular basis, not part of the CGM radio network, where I really like this show, but this particular host, he spends a lot of, he gets great points, and it's facts, it's data. He's on point, and it's a great show. But he insults people on the left throughout the entire show.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking to myself, man, you're really going to, kind of like the old adage which says you catch flies a lot easier with honey than vinegar.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really, really important. I think for people in general, but what you're saying is that Gen Z, especially because of, you know, it started, like you were saying, after World War II,
mm-hmm.
and the couple of generations that preceded their existence on Earth, they haven't been, you know, if this guy was a talk show host in the 1950s and he's slamming his opponents, they'd be like, okay, yeah, that hurt, but maybe he's right, you know,
yeah.
He might be right. You know, it was good to have them kind of stick it to me. What you're saying is that they're going to close down.
Oh yeah,
it's something like that.
And even worse, we're going to double down on the idea that the left has been perpetuating, and telling us all the time that, you know, conservatives are judgmental and evil and hate, and we're homophobic, and Christians and, you know, Western values are the bane of existence. Like, they're going to be reinforced in that if you try and hit them over the head with facts. In the speech that you saw, I said, the truth does not have to hurt. And that may sound very soft of me, and trust me, I can take a hard truth, but I know probably 90% of the kids that I know cannot.
Yeah.
And if you want to actually make a difference, truth makes sense when it is relayed in a cause and effect, a detailed way that explains the answers of why, how, when, where. You know, Gen Z are very keen to listening, and we will be okay with listening if you would take the darn time to explain why to us, and explain that, you know, self-responsibility is important. Feminism, it's not what you think it is. Legally, there is no segregation. There is no way that you can pay someone less based on their skin. You know, like, justice is an important idea. If you can tell us these things, but paint it in a way that we can actually understand it,
right,
and we emotionally want to understand it, then that will go a long way in creating a responsible and productive society.
I think so. And the scripture talks about this, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Speaking the truth in love.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I remember I was reading something, that pretty long scholarly article on MLK. And one of the things that MLK said was that he said that he's even, you know, supposed to love racists, right?
Yeah.
Even these racists that he despises, he's supposed to love them because he was a
right.
Christian. And another thing that he says, that people would criticize him for not, in some ways, at times confronting and condemning them too hard. But he said also at the same time, he recognized that there are people that he's been able to affect and influence because he didn't just come at them with a club.
Right.
But he recognized the fact that they are, in fact, human beings,
yeah,
with emotions, with feelings. And just like, I mean, nobody likes to get smacked over the head. I think
right.
there are some extreme times, like in Matthew 23, when Jesus was going after the Pharisees and stuff. But these were hardened religious hypocrites who for 3 years had been out to get him. You know,
one could say they deserved it.
Yeah, perhaps. And so, but I think it's that speaking the truth and love, and if we can't do that, then maybe we ourselves are not informed enough. Because a lot of times, right, I mean, a lot of times if we can't tell them why, Well, it's because we haven't done our homework on our end to study. Yeah. And so we, and when you don't know exactly how to respond to something, that's when your emotions get involved and the pejoratives come out and that 100%. Kind of thing.
Yeah. And actually something I'd want to focus in on there is if you don't know, then set little goals with your Gen Zer in your life to learn together. I mean, we are such a social group, and subsequently we are the loneliest of all generations that have come before us, but we're also the most interconnected. So to combat that and fight against that, I would really encourage any Gen Xers or boomers or whoever, if you don't know something, include the Gen Z person in your learning process. Mm-hmm. It will make them feel important. It will make their hostility go down because it's not you telling them why. It's something else, a third party source. It's research. You're doing it together. And that can go a long way in spreading truth, because we need to also be talking fondly about the ideas that we want to preserve and having conversations about them. And you know, the big failure, I think, of older generations is they don't ever have conversations with us. Mm. I mean, we are conversational beings to the core. We will have conversations over talk, text, like we will fall asleep with our best friend on the phone. And, you know, even if they're not in the same room as us. And we want that connection. We do. We crave it. And Gen X and boomers, y'all need to know that is the way that we thrive. So including us in your conversation will make us feel incredible and open us up to the possibility of converting someone from left to right.
Yeah, that's incredible. And there's nothing like a quality face-to-face in-person conversation in love, talking about facts, talking about it dispassionately, listening. Yeah. To the other person, listening to what they have to say and not getting too emotional and cutting them off or whatever. These are all just, it's treating them right like they're a human being. But I wanted to ask you, you talked about, you know, the social media.
Yeah.
You guys were, I mean, I remember being like I'm going to date myself here, but in 1995, I got my first computer, and I think the next year or the year after that, I had the internet. You guys were literally born with the internet in existence. It wasn't in full bloom. But the oldest of your generation was born with the internet in existence and just grew up on that.
Yeah.
Smartphones, all that, like what you were saying. But in terms of, you know, you're the most connected generation, but you're also the loneliest generation. How has social media affected and impacted the psychology, the emotional health? I think a lot of us probably are wondering, how do you guys kind of wade those waters of social media and loneliness and connectivity? And
well, when you say we're the most connected but also the most lonely, the most connected part is nodding and tipping its hat to social media. We are the most connected. I could talk to anybody I wanted, you know, if they would respond to me over DMs. And in that way, we are so connected. But as we all know, nothing is a substitute for in-person quality.
Right.
Community. That word is difficult because, you know, coming from a Reformed Baptist church where every year it was a new split, community is a hard thing to reach, but it's so important. And how do we wade through the waters? We don't do it very well, because since we don't know the world without the internet, we don't know the world without the internet. And we don't know the world without being the most connected, the most comparison filled, the most likes and engagement oriented, number oriented. We don't know the world without any of that. So that is our reality. That is our, you know, smartphones, that is what our lives consist of. So we weighed that in the most biblical way possible if we're striving to be that way, but then realizing the importance of having community and, you know, hanging out with your friends and having good dinners with your families. That's something that we rarely experience. Now, we light up when it does happen. But that is why, you know, moms, if you go onto your daughter's phone, you'll probably find Pinterest, and you'll probably find that she has like a Pinterest board called Things I Want to Do with My Friends. And it's all these pictures of girl groups doing these fun things, but she probably doesn't have a girl group to do it with. And that's a really interesting place to be in the world that takes a new level of empathy from older people to try and understand.
It's not something that we can even conceive of.
Right.
As kids, Gen Xers,
y'all were playing with sticks.
Yeah, well, Yes, more so than you guys, but remember, we're the Nintendo and Atari generation.
Right.
So we were really the first generation to have something other than books and television to really, and radio, to occupy our time. We were kind of the beginning of this whole kind of social transformation. So as were me and my friends, maybe we otherwise for hours would have been outside.
Yeah.
We were for hours playing, you know, inside playing Super Mario Brothers 3. And yeah, killing it, by the way. I'm pretty good at Super Mario Brothers 3. By the way, not to brag, but I really had the crowd in the room going when I would play Super Mario Brothers 3. But even still, that is nothing. That is nothing compared to the smartphone.
Yeah.
To the social media world. I mean, that is truly revolutionary in a way. I think Nintendo is probably more akin to being addicted to TV back in the day. This is a whole different level.
Well, it's a whole new level of addiction. I remember, you know, coming from being in LA all the time, every 15 minutes you were checking all of your social media apps on your phone. Now I could easily go 2 days without checking my Instagram and I'm the happiest person ever.
Absolutely.
And, you know, since it's so ingrained in our lives, as I said, we don't know life without it. Therefore, we don't know happiness without it. We don't know joy. We don't know connection without our phone. So I would encourage any parents to really just start doing things in person with your children. Recently, my family, we've started doing Sunday afternoon lunches. Everyone's there besides, you know, the brother who's at college. You're required to be there. You can't miss it. And it's really been lovely. And I'm just thinking, could you imagine if families actually started spending time together? Because the family is the weakest structure that we have in society right now. I mean, we have a crazy government. We have all these things like big tech, and we have churches, and we have huge corporations, and people are replacing their families with that. The family is literally the weakest structure right now. And the way you change society is starting with the family, period, end of story. Nobody can ever tell me anything different. And, you know, I really believe that if parents just took it upon themselves to start spending time with their kids again, that would actually make a huge difference in the progression of conservatism.
Yeah, absolutely. And we all know progressivism is really regressivism, right?
Right.
I mean, that's just the word they use for it. It's not what we think of it.
Right.
That reminds me of what Ronald Reagan said. I know.
If only he was here now.
We miss that beautiful man. But but Reagan said it really begins at the dinner table. That,
yes,
like, society changes at the dinner table. And that's why, look, we're all busy. Our kids are in this and that, and we're driving them all over the world and stuff. But at least if even like once or twice or a few times a week, everybody's at the dinner table and you guys talk about real things.
Yeah.
Even if it's after dinner, a lot of times our family will literally be hanging out around the kitchen island talking about all sorts of things, not just politics and even not just Christianity.
Or not even just your day. Just things.
Right.
All
right.
Things.
Well, what's on their hearts, you know? And,
yeah,
and a good tip for parents is that if you have a hard time opening up and connecting with your kids, spend more time. It's hard to make quality time happen, but you can make quantity time happen.
Ah.
And when you make quantity time happen, quality time eventually will, even if it takes a few hours for them to open up. But that's why you go on a camp out and go on these things. It's so critically important. I think that's why I think Satan, if there's one institution more than America and our constitutional republic, there's one institution he wants to destroy.
Yeah.
And that is the family, because without the family, you do not have a strong and stable society.
And ironically enough, you don't even have individual freedom once you take away the freedom of the family and the communication of the family. Now, I could not agree with that more. I mean, look at abortion. It tears apart families. Look at, you know, the welfare system. Look at how much we give people money depending on how many children they have if they don't have a father in the home.
Nice.
There is literally, I hate the word systemic because it's been used over and over and over to qualify justice, but there is systemic reasons to not have a family. And I think that's a huge moral issue, because every law is essentially reflective of the moral law. And I think that's something that conservatives need to know. You can't dictate morality. Every law is in touch with some form of morality, and it's the reflection of what's happening in the culture then. And if we are making laws around making it better to have single parent households or to incentivize families to not be together, then that is the reflection of the morality that we have. And morality, obviously, and ethics go hand in hand because ethics is the application of the morality that you have. So our ethics are technically the ones that are out of whack because we're applying things to families that shouldn't be applied to families because we don't have the importance of, I love the word you used, institution of the families. That's what I was trying to look for earlier.
Gotcha. And guys, right there is why you need to make sure to watch out for this young lady because she's going to be, she's moving and shaking already and she's just brilliant. And she's 18 years old. Just a reminder, guys, she's 18 years old.
I'm only this way because I was homeschooled. Okay. That is the biggest thing about me. It's classically educated, homeschooled parents. If you homeschool your children, it will probably be the best thing that you will ever do for your kid, period. Just do it.
Well, there you go. That's her, not me. So from an 18-year-old, someone who's been through it and is coming out and is really really kind of taking the world by storm right now. Really, I think your parents were raising world changers, and your siblings as well are fantastic too. I've met several of them, and it's just absolutely great. you're talking about getting involved.
Yes,
right, getting involved. Like, and I think a lot of people, especially right now with the Biden regime in power, with essentially all three branches of government. The Supreme Court at times is kind of on our side. Still, I mean, there have been some good rulings that have come out from the Supreme Court this year. But we definitely feel in the minority right now. A lot of us feel like, oh my gosh, there's this communist revolution taking over and there's nothing we can do about it. What is your advice to Gen Zers and really to anybody, you know, listening to this show about how to break out and kind of get involved and make a difference?
First things first, you need to know your rights if you want to start defending them. So I actually did a poll on my Instagram where I said, Patriot quiz time. The first slide.
It's
bad. The first slide I said, who has read the U.S. Constitution? Had about 3,000 people vote. Less than 20% had read the U.S. Constitution.
Actually, that's kind of... I'm kind of surprised, actually. It's that high.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
that's actually better than I thought it would be. But still, it's far lower than what it should be.
And provided maybe not every single person there was from America, but the majority of them were. So I'd say the first thing, parents, kids, anyone who wants to get involved, first thing actually I will say is Christians, you have to be involved. We have been sleeping. We have been quiet. We have been folding over and bending over. We have turned into a doormat Christianity, and that is something that I'm not standing for. So if you're a Christian, this is also applying to you, and I'm being very firm about this because y'all can take it. We were made for times such as these.
Come on.
So everyone, read the founding documents, read the 27 amendments, read the Constitution, read the Declaration of Independence. It's like a breakup over text. It's great. It's hilarious. I love the Declaration.
I love it too.
Oh, it's awesome. And I guarantee you, I'm not a particularly fast reader, and it took me 2 hours to read all of those. And all of a sudden, I knew my rights. I knew the purpose of Washington, D.C. I knew how the judicial system, what was the original intent of it. I knew why we declared independence from Britain for most, you know, the taxation without representation whole idea that was only like grievance 19
right.
in the Declaration. That was not the major reason. And the more you know, I mean, the First Amendment, Second Amendment, the first 10 amendments are pivotal for getting involved. So Christians, know your rights, because guess what? Your First Amendment rights were completely stomped upon this past year. Did anybody know that? Probably not. They probably weren't thinking about it. They were probably thinking about masking. No, that's our First Amendment right. Freedom to assemble and freedom of religion.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's no COVID clause in the First Amendment. There's no pandemic or plandemic, if you want to get a little conspiracy. There's no pan or plan or any other demic clause in the First Amendment.
I love that. There is no COVID clause. I wish I could say
that I came up with that on my own.
In my mind, you came up with it. So we'll leave it at that.
We all know the art of originality is the ability to conceal your sources. So we'll just go with that.
Every comedian ever.
Winston R. Holland. Yeah. I want a meme with that in my face and, Winston R. Holland.
I love it.
Make me famous. I'm just kidding. Please don't do that.
I love my anonymity.
So no, I mean, I love this. And this is what I love about Gen Z, because Gen Z is here to wake us Gen Xers and boomers up who, you know, and really in our defense, and it's really not a defense, but the reason we, for so long, you know, really post-World War II, obviously there's been conflicts within the political parties, but there's been generally amongst both parties, have been generally classically liberal, that believe in free speech, believe in the free exercise of religion, that believe in the Second Amendment. And I mean, the Democrat Party used to be the party of civil liberties. I saw a speech from Obama from like 2004 when he was a senator. He was killing it on the floor about on the Senate floor about civil liberties.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just like,
well, no, amen. Joe Biden used to be like, yeah, marriage is an institution between a man and a woman only. And now where are they going? You know, trying to get children to transition. I mean, it's just awful.
Oh, it's insane. They're going to start legalizing marriage with zebras or something.
Oh,
I mean,
man.
It's bizarre world. There's no, and that's why I think it's so important that we know our stuff on this, because what has happened? It's over the past few generations, especially started with the 1950s and 60s and the hippies and the leftists, the Marxists began to take over academic institutions.
Yeah.
It's now gone mainstream.
Now we're seeing the fruit of that. We're seeing how they've crept into everything and taken it over from the bottom up. And it didn't. Yeah. It took them about 40 years. That's reversible. But it's going to take work from us.
Yeah, it is. It's going to take time. It's going to take us engaging. It's going to take us retaking over these institutions. It's going to take us, I think, also, and that's on this network, Pastor Jim Barrier, his show, Since You Asked, he talks a lot about revival and the importance of revival and that 2 Chronicles 7, 13, 14 of us as a nation, or at least as a church, repenting of our sins, repenting of the sins of our nation, kind of like what Daniel did when he prayed for the nation of Israel. He included himself and said, we have sinned against you. We have gone astray. And I'm not talking about the woke garbage from 2020. We need to bowing before people because they have more melanin in our in our skin than we do.
Right.
Even if you were a racist, you don't need to like bow down before, if you were racist to someone, go apologize to them, but don't bow down before them. Bow down before God. We as a nation need to bow down before God.
Yeah.
And repent and turn to Him, right? And because we got to recreate the spiritual fabric of our society, bring it back.
No,
right?
And our faith has been completely gone. That's why wokeism is a thing. It's a lazy man's argument. It's a lazy man's doctrine, because all they're doing is looking literally at the color of someone's skin and deciding that immutable characteristics are better, or they deserve this thing literally because of the most obvious factor about them. That's lazy. And,
it's,
you know,
very
it's
shallow.
Yeah, it's
very
taken shallow. Away because it's because we don't have any faith anymore, any faith in anything at all except skin color. And that's just awful. Now, one thing I do want to say is a lot of Christians aren't necessarily pro-gun. Because Christians aren't necessarily pro-violence. But I'm going to tell you, if you're a Christian, you have to be pro-Second Amendment. You have to want the right to bear arms and protect yourselves. Why? Because the original intent of the Second Amendment was not only so that you could defend yourself, but you could defend yourself from a tyrannical government overreaching its bounds. And if self-governance is an idea that we find in the Bible and self-responsibility, then the right to bear arms has to come out after that. You can't rely on other people for, you know, to not take away your rights. And so what's keeping the government at bay is our Second Amendment rights. And guess what? You cannot have a First Amendment if you don't have a Second Amendment to protect it. So if you want the freedom to worship and to be, you know, associated with the religion that you want to be, then you're going to have to fight for the freedom to keep that right and fight for the freedom to defend it as well. And yes, obviously, we're not pro-violence as Christians, but the worst thing that could happen is you show up to a gun show, or sorry, you show up to a duel between you and a friend, and the friend has a gun and you don't. I mean, where in the Bible are you not supposed to wield a sword and have a shield and have the armor of God? You're supposed to have those things, and you're not supposed to forfeit those things as well. But our Second Amendment always protects our First Amendment, and that's what makes America so unique. I've been reading a book called America, Imagine a World Without Her. And in the first 20 pages, there's this story about this Frenchman named Tocqueville who comes over to America and he is in love with it. He actually started getting denounced in France simply because he was so pro-America. But
well,
he
sounds
said,
familiar.
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay, Thomas Jefferson. But he said, Tocqueville identifies what he later called American exceptionalism. For Tocqueville, Americans are unique because they are equal. Well, guess what the great equalizer is? It's not speech. It's not religion. It's not necessarily even capitalism at this point. You know, competition, the great equalizer. No, it's the right to bear arms. Because that's what keeps the competition equal. If you want to not be afraid to walk around at night, women, you're going to have to then have a gun, you know, or have a man with you who has a gun. I mean, we need to see the Second Amendment as something that gives us that, quote, equality that we want. Everyone can equally defend themselves. And the government is also on an equal playing field as us because we can keep the government in check with the right to bear arms. And that's why they're trying so hard to crack down on
it. So how do you respond to those who would say, well, I mean, the Second Amendment is outdated because there's no way that we could take on the United States Army, Marines, Air Force, Navy. I guess the Navy wouldn't be applicable in a land battle, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They say, well, it's outdated. Like back then, everybody had pretty much the same kind of weapons.
Right.
So we don't need the Second Amendment anymore because, yeah, I agree with you, Lily. The original intent was to check tyrannical government, but there's no way we could do
that
now.
Yeah, there are drones and tanks their manpower. I mean, we have the most fantastic military in the whole existence of ever. And I may be a little bit biased, but I'm a very big patriot.
Amen.
And so what I say to that is, the right to bear arms also incentivizes government workers and the government ourselves to not go to war with us. Because, yes, they have a lot more firepower than we do. But guess what? If the government comes and bombs your house, I'll go storm the Capitol and I'll say, you cannot do that. We'll come in the masses. We have the masses on our side. And so, one, you know, the Second Amendment says foreign and domestic terrorists. So we can use our firepower to protect from outside sources, yes, but inside sources are also important to protect against. And if everybody had a gun or had something that was classified as a firearm, you know, we will make a statement in a different way. It might not be we're going to fight the tanks and drones that are coming our way, first of all, because we can't assume that the government's not ever going to do that to us, because I believe that they probably will, and that will be probably the next civil war. It'll be north and south, but it'll be federal versus state. I really think that's the next
stay
area
tuned.
Of tension.
Stay tuned, ladies
I know,
and gentlemen.
I know. America's 21st century. We're gonna be a little crazy. But where I was going with that is that just the fact that we have the ability to bear arms, the fact that if a policeman is doing something wrong, we can defend ourselves. Obviously, there's a lot around defunding the police and all that. But, you know, there is something that has to be said, that the government is afraid of the people.
Right.
They're afraid.
Right.
I mean, we've seen this with the Derek Chauvin trial. They're afraid of the mob. They're afraid of violence. I don't think Derek Chauvin should have been convicted for second and third degree murder or whatever he was, because that means intentional and unintentional murder at the same time.
It goes in line with what we were talking about earlier, right?
Two ideas in someone's brain.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so no, I don't think that he should have been convicted whatsoever. Now, I don't think there would have been a different outcome because of the mob, the woke mass of people that threatened to burn down cities again. I mean, the BLM riots, that was the biggest insurance claim in world history, almost $2 billion of money. Okay, that's ridiculously terrifying. And if we have the masses on our side, which we do, we always call ourselves the silent majority, and we're growing day by day, the government is afraid of the masses.
Yeah,
they want power over us because we've been sedated and we're lazy and weak right now. But as soon as you get a firearm and know your state's gun laws and use your First Amendment in person, because they can't really monitor that as much as they can on social media, that is how we're going to fight back. So Christian, Second Amendment, super important for you.
Well, this was not the kind of stuff I was thinking about at 18, but we won't go into my obliviousness back then. No, this is fantastic stuff. And what I like to ask is then, okay, if the Second Amendment is outdated and we really have no chance against the United States Army, why do they still want to take all of our guns away. It's just for the protection, so we don't have things like school shootings. Baloney. You're still going to have school shootings. You're just going to have the lawful residents that don't have their guns. And the people breaking the law will still have their guns. Yeah. And so it's not going to, you know, it's not going to solve
the
problem.
Well, the Second Amendment is not outdated because evil and sin are not outdated either. They're still prevalent. And
that they are.
Right. Well, you know, and they're not going away. So why should our objective truth and the inalienable rights that we get from God?
What?
The government doesn't give us our rights, y'all.
What, Lily?
Oh, really? I know. The only thing the government is capable of doing is taking away your rights.
Yeah. That's it. They can protect your rights. And they can take them away, but they don't create.
Yeah, they don't
true human rights.
And I don't know who needs to hear this today. The CDC also doesn't give you and grant you rights. Okay.
I thought the CDC was.
I thought it was the experts.
It was like heaven opens up and
and Dr. Fauci is there.
Oh, Fauci.
Oh man, okay. he just loves his
Oh man, it's his time. It's his time. Right. And he's been waiting. He's been head of the NIAID for like 800,000 years. And
COVID's
it's
the best
finally,
thing that's ever happened to him.
Oh, to him. And then George Floyd was the best thing that ever happened to BLM. And it's terrible. It's all converging. So is there anything else you want to say or to challenge? You're talking to mostly Gen Xers and boomers on this show. Anything else you want to say to that just about getting involved?
Talk to your churches. Your churches are pretty powerful institutions that have a lot of people. And all of the darn time, churches are like, they throw their hands up and say, I'm not getting involved in politics. It's dark. It's messy. It's sticky. It's terrible.
And they condemn you for doing so.
And then you say, well, guess what? I really hate to tell you, but Christianity is worse. Christianity is darker. It's messier. It's more sticky. Christianity is dealing with heart issues. Politics is dealing with heart issues in the world. Where's the difference? Actually, back to my Tocqueville book. Just give me like one moment.
Dinesh D'Souza, America, Imagine a World Without
You know,
Her.
Apparently he lives in the woodlands.
Yeah, he does.
That's
he
great.
Does. I hope to run into him sometime on Market Street or something like that.
I know.
That.
I'll be excited for that day. He writes, therefore, quite apart from its theological function, Tocqueville writes that for Americans, religion, quote, must be regarded as the first of their political institutions, end quote. Y'all, Christians, you have no excuse for not being involved. It's a battle of good and evil. Weren't we created for this? Isn't this our thing? It's not left and right. If you pay attention for a day, you see it's not left and right anymore. Yeah. So Christians, get your churches involved and corner your pastors in a nice way and say, we have no excuses. Why are we not standing outside of a Planned Parenthood and sending people there to pray? Why are we not? I mean, obviously, the pulpit's not a place to talk about politics, but being involved in the ground level, why are we not encouraging our people, whatever, our people, congregation, yes. Why are we not encouraging our congregation to go vote, go donate to organizations, go get involved, go, you know, help with the orphan crisis that's happening right now, getting involved? Why are we not doing that? Because these institutions are out there and the way to get involved is out there. So we need to be crowding as a church and doing those things and getting involved with that, because that's how we're going to be engaged in the culture on a personal level. And that's how, and that's where you could lead to the Jesus conversation, which is the end goal. So churches, amen. Christians, call upon your churches, get them involved and be firm about it. You can be graciously and lovingly firm.
Amen. Amen. No, that's fantastic. And that's, you know, a lot of us, you know, we feel like, oh, the problem is so big, little old me, there's nothing that I can do about it. But I remember reading a quote a few years back, and the quote said something to the effect of, you know, don't think that a small group of highly motivated people cannot change the world.
Right.
Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has.
Oh, man.
Every small movement, every big movement
starts
with a small.
Look at the court cases in 1962. They decided to start taking the Ten Commandments, prayer, and America or Christianity out of schools. And you know, 97% of America was Christian at that time. It was that 3% of people who wanted Christianity to be out of the schools. And look where it's gotten us today. 1962 court cases really started the downward spiral. Wow. And all of a sudden, 10 years later, abortion was legalized.
Didn't take long
at all. So you are so correct about that.
And not long after that, it was in the late 90s when school shootings began to be more regular. You know, we had the Second Amendment for almost 200 years.
Right.
Before, like, the first school shooting, the first big one, like at UT and so forth, happened. Yeah. And then there was even a period after that. But after they took God out of the schools.
Yeah.
Not the Second Amendment. It was a generation or so after they took God out of the schools.
Right.
That's when the school shootings began happening over and over. Because what happened? You took away, when you take away the moral foundation and fabric of society, and I'm sorry, but materialism, atheism cannot and will not ever be able to provide that.
Right.
And so that's why it's so important to get God back into schools. And I've heard people say, well, I don't want them teaching Christianity in the schools because I don't want them pushing, you know, some other religion on my kid. And I'm like, look, religion's going to be taught in school.
Yeah.
Atheistic, materialism, Darwinism, it's all religion.
It's all there.
It's all belief.
Yeah.
It's all belief.
And we were built on a Christian nation. And I really hate to say it, but like, all of our founding fathers were religious. People are going to try and tell you that they were not Christians. They absolutely were. Congress's first endeavor after they basically ratified the Constitution is printing 20,000 Bibles. We are a Christian nation. We one nation under God. I mean, we're not going to take that out. And if you don't want to be that religion, well, then just find your religion in another place. But we are a Christian nation, and we should be. And it's not a coincidence that the moral degradation and the rise of degeneracy has been blooming ever since the 1960s and 70s. I mean, it's very obvious when you see what's happening in the court, because again, every law is reflective of the moral law.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the dumbest things to ever come out, I remember them talking about it big time in the 90s. You can't legislate morality. You can't legislate morality. And then you shouldn't judge. You shouldn't judge. You shouldn't judge.
Look where that's gotten us, conservatives.
Yeah, and all they were doing was legislating morality. You look at the Obergefell decision. To them, that's moral. It's moral that gays have the legal right to marry. Whatever they claim, the opposite of it is actually true. But this idea, no, all laws, like what you're saying, all laws are a reflection of the moral law or of some type of morality. So it's either going to go in line with God's morality or the morality that we
perceive
and make up. Because during the Obergefell stuff, it's like, you know, marriage is between two consenting adults. And I'm like, where did you get that definition forever?
Yeah.
I have a 1996 American Heritage Dictionary. A few years ago, I looked up marriage. And you know what it says in the dictionary that a friend of mine bought it for me from Barnes & Noble in the 90s and gave it to me?
Uh-huh.
It says a lifelong union between a man and a woman.
Wow.
Right there in the
you
dictionary.
You would never find that anywhere today.
No, not today. And it's because it was the moral fabric of our society produced that definition, the Christian fabric of our society. Otherwise, we're just, what do you mean two consenting adults? What about two non-consenting adults? Why couldn't it be that? Why couldn't it be, or like the pedophilia movement that's
oh my
gaining
goodness.
Acceptance, and we're trying to be more empathetic to pedophilia. I mean, there's, you know, so that's why we can't just make stuff up. It leads to very, very dark places. So I wanted to ask you, we're kind of nearing the end of our interview. This has been incredible. I've loved having you on. We're going to have you back. And actually,
let's do it.
And actually, I'm about to be on your show.
Yes.
We're going to close up here, and then we're going to record a show, and I'm going to be interviewed on your show, which I'm really excited about. So be sure to subscribe to the Lily Kate Show on your favorite podcasting app, because you'll be able to hear me blab more on there. And she's a far superior interviewer than I am.
Oh, man. I don't think so.
She's absolutely, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm learning so much about like how to interview listening to this to this girl. It's so great. So any parting words? I know you've been called like the white Candace Owens, which I think is like...
I'll wear that as my badge of honor.
Is very apropos. And, you know, like we were talking about before, I think some people would be offended by that. But I think one person who wouldn't be offended by that would be Candace Owens. but there'd be all kinds of people that would be offended for her.
Right.
you know, you really like to challenge Christians and to kind of bring us home. Do you have, I guess, any final words for us or final thoughts on how to, whether it's how to relate to Gen Z, how to get involved? You know, what would you like to leave the World News Brief audience with?
There is strength in the family, first of all. So much strength. There's also a lot of strength in empathy. And Gen Z, we often are told to shut up and sit down, and we're not worthy to have this conversation. So kind of summarizing pretty much what we've talked about, Gen Z is strong in their emotions. And I know that sounds a bit like an oxymoron, but those are powerful guiding tools that we can utilize to bring Christianity to the nations and to everyone. I mean, Acts 1:8, that is our calling. We are supposed to be witnesses throughout all of Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. And Christianity can only be relayed in a way of humility and emotions, because it's such an emotional gospel. It's the truthful, but also emotional. That's what makes the gospel so perfect. So Gen X and boomers, y'all need to really help Gen Z hone the strength that they do have in their empathy, because it's important, it's wonderful, and that is the thing that will lead us to that Jesus conversation, which I believe will fix all of the political, First Amendment, Second Amendment, racial, all of those issues and tensions in America, because we are a Christian nation. Someone, I don't know who it was, but someone said, God takes special care of the orphans and the widows and the United States of America. And I believe that God's not done.
Yeah.
We can't let China become the world superpower because they're not a Christian nation. And I really believe that. We were talking about revival just briefly. Revival is happening, and the Jesus conversation needs to happen, because all the political stuff will fall in line after that.
There is nothing I could possibly say to add on to that. Just play that last minute over and over and over again. Just go backwards in the podcasting app and listen to that several times. It was beautifully put. It was intelligently put, and it's really just right on with what we're facing as a nation. Well, Lily, it has been an absolute pleasure to come to have you on the show. Will you come back and join us in the future?
100%. We're here at a coffee shop right now, so like I'm gonna get some coffee. I'll be back every week if you want me to be.
So all I got to do to get her back is to do a podcast at a podcasting studio within a coffee shop and
yes.
buy her a coffee, and she'll be back.
I'm here.
I think my ROI is like through the roof on something like that. That's fantastic. So again, make sure to follow Lily Cole online. All of her social media links will be in the show notes of this podcast, so make sure to check that out. Lily, thanks for joining us. We'll have you back soon.
Thank you. Godspeed, everyone.